You are listening to a podcast from the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace.
Well, good morning, everybody. My name is Dan Brumberg, and on behalf of the United States Institute of Peace and the Carnegie Endowment for Peace, I'd like to welcome all of you to this special event, this discussion, this dialogue with Shireen Ebadi. You know, I'm a little nervous. I've never introduced a Nobel laureate before. And it's a wonderful opportunity. I'm not going to say very much because I think you all are familiar with her work, her career, the kinds of risks she has taken, her efforts to promote human rights in Iran, and, of course, universal human rights. As I was going through some material last night thinking about today's event, I found a piece in The Nation, one of my favorite publications, an interview with Mrs. Ebadi, in which she says the political sanctions should not be used as a last resort. Dialogue has to take place at three levels, at the level of people in civil society, among members of parliament, and by heads of government of both countries. Now, we come here at an interesting moment. It's a moment where, as we speak, they are celebrating the anniversary of the revolution in Iran. We have a new president in the White House who's pursuing the possibility of engagement and dialogue with Iran. And while these events and other related events are occurring, I think we need to take very seriously the proposition of today's speaker that among the many dialogues that should take place between the United States and Iran, the dialogue between civil society here and the dialogue between civil society and Iran is absolutely fundamental and not contradictory in any kind of way with the dialogue between governments as well. So we meet here in that spirit, and I would like to welcome Mrs. Ebadi, and we very much look forward to what she has to say. Our procedure is she will spend about 20, 25 minutes, Kareem, is that right, speaking. The translation will follow, and then we will open up to discussion with my able colleague to my right here, handling that part of the job. So good morning to everybody. Welcome, and let's get started.
سلام میکنم به همه حضار و خوشحالم که این فرصت به من داده شد که امروز با شما صحبت کنم.
Good morning to everyone present here and I'm very glad to be able to talk to you today.
بین ملت ایران و ملت آمریکا سابقه دوستی و فرهنگی بسیار زیادی بوده.
There is a history of friendship between Iranian people and American people.
حدود 2 میلیون ایرانی در آمریکا زندگی می‌کنند که اینها شهروندان خیلی خوبی برای شما بودند.
Approximately 2 million Iranians live in America and they have been good citizens for this country.
و آمریکایی‌ها هم از اینها خیلی خوب پذیرایی کردند و که از این بابت سپاسگزارم.
And the Americans have been very hospitable to these people, and I thank them for that.
اگر هر ایرانی که در آمریکا زندگی میکنه حداقل 5 تا خانواده یا دوست در ایران داشته باشه، ببینید چه تعداد عظیمی از مردم ایران علاقمند به بهبود رابطه سیاسی دو کشور هستند.
Each Iranian who lives in the United States has at least 5 members of his or her family in Iran. Just imagine how many people would like to have a good relationship between the two countries, would enjoy having this relationship.
و امیدوارم که اختلافات سیاسی بین دو کشور به زودی حل بشه و روابط ما عادی باشه.
And I hope that in the near future the political problems between the two countries are solved and we can have normal relationship.
به نظر من هیچ اختلاف غیر قابل حلی وجود نداره و هر چه که هست سوء تفاهمه.
I don't think that there are differences that cannot be resolved. I think what exists is just a misunderstanding.
برای اینکه این اختلافات برطرف بشه من گفتگوی مستقیم و بدون پیش شرط رو همواره اشاره کردم.
In order to resolve the problems I have always talked about dialogue with no preconditions.
و با تغییر رئیس جمهور به نظر میرسه که این مسئله پیش شرط حل شده و گفتگوی مستقیم رو در آمریکا هم پذیرفتند.
And with the new president in office in the United States, it looks like the issue of preconditions has been set aside and direct negotiations have been accepted.
مذاکرات بایستی در سه سطح مختلف باشه: رؤسای جمهور دو کشور، پارلمان دو کشور و جامعه مدنی دو کشور.
Negotiations have to take place at different levels between the people of both countries, between the presidents of both countries and between the parliaments of both countries.
مذاکرات فقط نبایستی ناظر به مسئله انرژی هسته‌ای باشه، بلکه در راستای اعتلای حقوق بشر هم بایستی باشه.
Negotiations should not simply focus on the nuclear issue. It should also concern the progress of human rights.
مذاکرات بایستی به نفع مردم هر دو کشور باشه و نه فقط به نفع گروه یا چند کمپانی از دو کشور.
Negotiations should focus on the interests of the people of both countries, not only a few corporations or big entities.
مذاکرات بین پارلمان ها و حقوق رؤسای دو کشور رو به ما مربوط نیست، ولی که من الان چون یک به عنوان یک فردی از جامعه مدنی ایران اینجا هستم، اجازه بدید که مطالبی رو با هم در میان بگذاریم.
I don't want to talk about presidential or parliamentary negotiations, but as a citizen of Iran, I would like to talk to you about the civil society negotiations.
مسئله ای که امروز میخوام با شما صحبت بکنم در حقیقت ارتباط بین حقوق بشر و اسلامه.
Therefore, I want to talk to you about the relationship between human rights and Islam today.
هم در کشورهای غیر دموکراتیک اسلامی و هم در بین برخی از توریسین‌های غرب اینطور شنیده میشه که اسلام با حقوق بشر قابل جمع نیست.
Some non-democratic Islamic countries and also some philosophers in the West believe that Islam and human rights are not compatible.
اینها مردم مسلمان رو بین یک دوراهی میخوان قرار بدن که یا آزادی و برابری رو انتخاب بکن یا اسلام رو.
They want to put the Islamic people on a spot, meaning that you either have to accept freedom and equality or Islam.
این مسئله فقط به سود کشورهای غیر حکومت‌های غیر دموکراتیک اسلامی تموم میشه.
This approach will only be used by non-democratic Islamic countries who will benefit from it.
برای اینکه به محض اینکه مردم بگویند ما آزادی رو و برابری رو انتخاب میکنیم، اون وقت حکومت راحت به اینها میگه مرتد و میتونه اینها رو بکشه.
Because if the people elect freedom and equality, then the government will name them as apostates and can execute them.
بنابراین بایستی راه دیگه ای رو انتخاب کرد.
Therefore, we have to find another solution.
من به نسبیت فرهنگی اعتقاد ندارم.
I don't believe in cultural relativism.
و فکر می‌کنم که حقوق بشر یونیورساله و یک استانداردی بین‌المللی برای چگونه زیستن.
I think that human rights is universal and it's an international standard for living.
و به همین دلیله که من با اعلامیه اسلامی حقوق بشر مخالفم و چیزی به نام حقوق بشر اسلامی رو قبول ندارم.
And this is why I do not believe in the Islamic Declaration of Human Rights and I do not accept Islamic human rights.
اگر مسلمان‌ها اجازه داشته باشند که به مناسبت مذهبشون یک اعلامیه اسلامی بنویسند، بنابراین این همین حق رو برای سایر ادیان هم بایستی قائل باشن که اونا هم برای خودشون یه اعلامیه حقوق بشر بنویسن.
If we accept that the Muslims can write an Islamic human rights declaration, then we have to accept that other religions do the same thing.
و از این به بعد ما شاهد اعلامیه بودایی حقوق بشر، اعلامیه هندویی بود حقوق بشر، اعلامیه یهودی حقوق بشر و هزاران اعلامیه حقوق بشر دیگه خواهیم بود.
And from now on we will see Buddhist human rights declarations, Hindu human rights declarations, Jewish human rights declarations and so on and so forth.
و این باعث از بین رفتن حقوق بشر خواهد بود.
Which will result in the abolition of human rights.
و اگر استانداردهای حقوق بشر از بین بره، اون کشور افرادی که ضعیف‌ترن در جهان صدمه بیشتری خواهند خورد.
And if the standards are abolished, standards of human rights, then the weaker people in the world will be the ones who will suffer.
و کشورهای اسلامی متاسفانه ضعیف‌تر هستند. بنابراین از جهت سیاسی هم به نفع اونها نیست که اعلامی حقوق بشر رو تضعیف بکنن.
And unfortunately Islamic countries are the weakest and I think that politically it's not to their benefit to support an Islamic human rights declaration.
بنابراین می‌بینیم که حقوق بشر اسلامی هم از جهت توری غلطه هم از جهت سیاسی.
Therefore as we see an Islamic human rights is both unacceptable theoretically and politically.
و همچنین واژه‌ای به نام فمینیسم اسلامی اونم غلطه.
And also a phrase called Islamic feminism, that's wrong too.
اما توجه داشته باشید که یک مسلمان می‌تواند مدافع حقوق بشر باشد و می تواند فمینیست باشد.
But let's accept that a Muslim can be a feminist and can defend human rights.
و اگر حکومتی بر مبنای ایدئولوژی اسلامی تأسیس شده باشه، بایستی طوری قوانین رو تفسیر بکنه، قوانین مذهبی رو تفسیر بکنه که ضوابط حقوق بشر رو بتونه رعایت بکنه.
And if a government is founded on Islamic criteria, it has to come up with an interpretation of human rights and Islam that are compatible.
این اتفاقی است که و این راهی است که روشنفکران و اسلامی‌های مدرن به دنبالشه.
This is the path that the intellectuals and modern Islamists are taking.
در حقیقت با احترام به مذهب جامعه حقوق بشر رو میخوان پیاده بکنن.
In reality, with respect to the religion of the society, they want to be able to apply human rights.
برای اینکه این قسمت از بحث بیشتر باز بشه اجازه بدین که من یک توضیحی راجع به مفهوم دموکراسی به شما بدم.
In order to open it up a little more, I want to give you an explanation about democracy.
در تعریف کلاسیک دموکراسی یعنی حکومت اکثریت.
In its classical meaning, democracy means the rule of the majority.
اما توجه بکنید که خیلی از دیکتاتورها با دموکراسی به قدرت رسیدن مثل هیتلر.
But let's not forget that many of the dictators came to power with democracy like Hitler.
بنابراین دموکراسی یک چارچوبی داره که نمیشه از اون تخطی کرد.
Therefore there is a framework for democracy that has to be observed.
و چارچوب دموکراسی ضوابط حقوق بشره.
And the framework for democracy are the criteria of human rights.
یعنی حکومتی که با اکثریت به قدرت میرسه حق نداره هر طوری که بخواد عمل بکنه.
This means that a government that has won on the basis of the vote of the majority cannot do as it pleases.
حق نداره به بهانه مذهب نیمی از زنان، نیمی از افراد جامعه یعنی زنان رو از حقوق خودشون محروم بکنه.
This kind of government does not have the right to deprive women who consist half of the society from their basic rights.
حق مثل اتفاقی که در کشورهای اسلامی از جمله ایران افتاده.
Like what happened in some Islamic countries, for example, Iran.
اکثریتی که در یک انتخابات آزاد به قدرت میرسه حق نداره جلوی آزادی بیان رو بگیره.
The majority that wins does not have the right to stop freedom of speech.
مثل اتفاقی که در چین افتاده.
Like what happened in China.
بنابراین اکثریت به قدرت رسیده مشروعیت خودش رو از صندوق رأی به تنهایی نمیگیره.
Therefore the majority that wins does not only take its legitimacy from the ballots.
بلکه مشروعیت خودش رو از صندوق رأی و احترام به حقوق بشر توامن میگیره.
But both from the votes and respect for human rights.
با این ترتیب اگر در یک کشوری اسلامی ها با انتخابات آزاد هم به قدرت برسن حق ندارن به بهانه مذهب حقوق بشر رو نادیده بگیرن.
Therefore in a country, for example, if the Islamists win, they do not have the rights to deprive people of their human rights on the basis of Islam.
مثلا در ترکیه دیدیم که اخیراً حزب اسلامی با انتخابات به قدرت رسید.
For example, recently in Turkey, we observed that the Islamic Party won through democracy, through majority.
آیا ما حق داریم بگیم که شما حق مردم ترکیه حق نداشتن به اسلامی رأی بدن؟
Do we have the right to say that the people of Turkey did not have the right to elect the Islamists?
مسلماً نه.
Of course not.
اما اینی که مسلمان ها با انتخابات آزاد به قدرت رسیدن دلیل نمی شود که اونها حقوق بشر رو زیر پا بگذارن.
But the fact that the Muslims won with the majority of the vote does not mean that they can violate human rights.
این همین حرف در مورد ایران هست.
The same thing is true about Iran.
ما الان در آستانه 30 سال انقلاب اسلامی هستیم.
We are close to the 30th anniversary of the Islamic Revolution.
انقلاب اسلامی با رأی مردم به پیروزی رسید.
The Islamic Revolution came to power with the vote of the people.
شما تحت هیچ ضابطه‌ای نمیشه گفتش که در سال 1357 مردم این حکومت اسلامی رو نمیخواستن. نه، رأی داده بودن به جمهوری اسلامی.
There's no way that we can say that the people of Iran in 1979 did not want the Islamic Revolution. No, they voted for it.
بنابراین حکومت از بابت رأی جمهوری، حکومت جمهوری اسلامی از بابت رأی گرفتن در سال 1357 مقبولیت داره.
Therefore, the Islamic Republic does have legitimacy for the votes of the people, which happened in 1979.
اما آیا مشروعیت هم داره؟
But whether it has legitimacy,
مشروعیتش زمانی میآید که حقوق بشر رو رعایت بکنه.
Its legitimacy can only be proved if it observes human rights.
و اما وضعیت حقوق بشر در ایران چگونه است؟
And what is the story of human rights in Iran? What is the status of human rights?
دولت ایران کنوانسیون بین‌المللی حقوق مدنی سیاسی و کنوانسیون بین‌المللی حقوق اقتصادی اجتماعی رو پذیرفته و متعهد اجرا شده.
The government of Iran has accepted the conventions on political and economic rights and has agreed to apply that.
این دو کنوانسیون های ستون‌های اصلی و پایه‌ای حقوق بشر هستند.
These two conventions are the two major basic columns of human rights.
تمام حرف من و سایر مدافعان حقوق بشر در ایران اینه: حالا که شما کنوانسیون‌ها رو پذیرفتید، یعنی قبول کردید، خب اونا رو بیاید اجرا کنید.
All of what I'm saying and what the rest of the defenders of human rights in Iran are saying is that now that you have accepted the conventions, why don't you apply them?
و در حقیقت حرف جامعه مدنی ایران همینه.
And in reality, this is what the civil society in Iran says.
و من این حرف رو دارم به شما میزنم که از جامعه مدنی آمریکا هستید، نه از سیاستمداران، که بدانید جامعه مدنی ایران چه میخواهد.
And this is why I'm bringing up this issue with you who are from the civil society in America and not a politicians, to see and understand what the civil society of Iran wants.
چیزی که ما میخواهیم اجرای تعهدات بین المللی دولت ایرانه.
What we want is the application of the international obligations of the government of Iran.
آیا دولت ایران به تعهدات بین المللیش عمل میکنه یا نه؟
Does the government of Iran enforce its international obligations or no?
در برخی موارد خیر.
In many instances, no.
پایه حقوق بشر نفی هر گونه تبعیض است بر اساس جنسیت، مذهب، قومیت، جایگاه‌های اقتصادی و اجتماعی.
The basis of human rights is negation of any gender or racial or religious discrimination.
در قوانین ما متاسفانه تبعیض بر اساس جنسیت وجود داره.
Unfortunately, in our laws there are gender discrimination issues.
من الان چند قانون رو به عنوان نمونه براتون میگم.
I will give you a few examples of the laws.
ارزش جان زن نیمی از ارزش جان مرده.
The value of the life of a woman is half of that of a man.
اگر من و برادرم با هم بریم خیابون و مورد حمله یک تروریست واقع بشیم، مثلا هر دوتامون پامون رو از دست بدیم، خسارتی که قانون به برادر من میده دو برابر خسارتی است که برای من تعیین کردن.
If me and my brother go onto the street and we are attacked by a terrorist, for example, and we both lose limbs, the law predicts a payment of compensation to my brother twice as much as it does to me.
شهادت دو زن در دادگاه معادل با شهادت یک مرد.
Testification of two women in court equals testification of one man.
یه وقت میتونه چهار تا زن بگیره.
A man can marry four wives.
و بسیاری قوانین دیگه.
And several other laws.
و جای تأسفه که این قوانین در جامعه اجرا میشه که بیش از 65% دانشجویان دانشگاهش دخترن.
And unfortunately these laws are being enforced in a country where over 65% of the university students are female.
و زنها در ما تعداد زیادی زنه استاد دانشگاه، پزشک، مهندس در سطوح بالای مدیریت اداری داریم.
And we have numerous women as university professors, medical doctors or engineers at higher levels.
و به همین دلیله که و تمامی این قوانین بعد از انقلاب تصویب شد و به همین دلیله که زنان ایران معترض هستند، برای اینکه این قوانین با فرهنگ ما همخوانی نداره.
And all of these laws were passed after the revolution, and this is why most women object to them, because our culture does not accept these laws.
و جنبش فمینیستی در ایران بسیار قویه.
The feminist movement is very strong in Iran.
ما در قوانین تبعیض بر اساس مذهب داریم.
In our laws, we do have discrimination on the basis of religion.
مذهب رسمی شیعه است، اما سایر فرق اسلامی از جمله سایر فرق اسلامی و همچنین ادیان مسیحی، یهودی و زرتشتی به رسمیت شناخته شده.
The official religion of Iran is Shia Islam. However, other branches of Islam and other religions such as Judaism, Zoroastrianism and Christianity have been recognized in the law.
اما تعدادی از ایرانی ها هستن که مذهبی غیر از اینا دارن، مثل بهایی ها.
But then there are some Iranians who do not believe in any of the religions that I enumerated, like the Baha'is.
اینا هیچ حقی ندارن.
They have no rights.
مثلا بهایی ها از اول انقلاب تا به الان حتی اجازه نداشتن برن دانشگاه.
For example, the Baha'is have been deprived of attending university from the time of the revolution up to now.
و بین مذاهب به رسمیت شناخته شده هم تبعیض قانونی هست.
Even among the religions that have been officially recognized, there is discrimination.
مثلا در تهران که 12 میلیون جمعیت داره اجازه ندادن تا الان یک مسجد اهل تسنن ساخته بشه.
For example, in Tehran, with a population of 12 million, they have not permitted the erection of even one Sunni mosque.
و سنی‌ها هر چی درخواست کردن موافقت نشده.
The Sunnis have requested several times but have never been able to get permit of the government.
در قوانین بر اساس مذهب تبعیض زیادی وجود داره که متاسفانه وضع من داره ساعت من داره به پایان میرسه من فقط اشاره میکنم.
And in our laws there are numerous religious discriminations, but since we don't have that much time I'm just going to name them.
آزادی بیان در ایران بسیار کمه.
Freedom of speech is very limited in Iran.
و خط قرمز مطبوعات خیلی پررنگه.
And the red line of the media is very strong.
با مدافعان حقوق بشر در ایران همواره در معرض خطرن.
All the defenders of human rights in Iran face danger all the time.
من اجازه میخوام که از یکی از موکلین خودم با شما صحبت کنم.
I want to talk to you about one of my clients.
آقای کبودوند که به جرم تأسیس حقوق بشر در کردستان ایران به 10 سال حبس محکوم شده و الان هم تو زندانه.
Gentleman named Mr. Kabudwand, who has been convicted of having founded a human rights institution in Iran and has been imprisoned for 10 years and is still in prison.
حتما شاید شنیده باشید که دفتر کانون مدافعان حقوق بشر که من افتخار ریاستش رو دارم هم در این ماه بسته شد.
You might have heard that the Center for the Defense of Human Rights that I happen to be the director of was closed down this month.
البته ما اعلام کردیم که دفتر رو بستن ولیکن این به معنای تعطیل یا کاهش فعالیت های ما نیست.
Of course, we have always announced that although the office has been closed down, but this doesn't mean that we have limited our activities.
و ما فعالیت هامون رو ادامه دادیم.
And we continued our activities.
امیدوارم که وضعیت طوری باشه که مدافعان حقوق بشر در ایران بتوانند به وظایف خودشون عمل کنند.
I hope that the situation is such that the defenders of human rights can perform their duties.
ممنونم از اینکه با حوصله به حرفای من گوش کردید. آماده هستم اگر سوالاتی داشته باشید جواب بدم.
And thank you for listening to me and tolerating me. If you have any questions, I'll be pleased to respond to them.
Well, thank you so much. That was wonderful. And we'll go to questions now. If I can ask you to first introduce yourself and be as concise as possible. I'll just start off with the first question. As we know, it's the 30th anniversary of the revolution now. And I wanted to ask you to reflect a bit on the last 30 years. And you were a judge during the time of the Shah. And if you can kind of compare the Shah's time with now, from the human rights perspective, is it easier to be a political dissident now, or was it during the time of the Shah? Is it easier to be a religious minority now, or during the time of the Shah?
باید صادقانه به شما بگم همزمان شاه اوضاع بد بود هم الان.
In order to be honest with you, I have to tell you that they were both bad, both during the Shah's reign and now.
شما توجه بکنید که من در ابتدای حرفام گفتم که انقلاب اسلامی به خواست مردم ایران بود.
I'm sure that you all listened to me when I said that the Islamic revolution happened on the basis of the vote of the people.
آیا مردمی که راضی باشن از وضعیتشون انقلاب میکنن؟
If people are happy with their situation, will they revolt?
طبیعتاً نه.
Naturally no.
انقلاب نشانه نارضایتی توده های مردمه.
A revolution symbolizes the unhappiness of the people.
منتها اون موقع از جهتی بد بود و حالا از جهتی دیگر بد.
But things were different then, bad and different. Now they're bad and different.
و به هر حال بد بده.
In any way, bad is bad.
زمان شاه من قاضی بودم و بعد از انقلاب گفتن که چون تو زنی نمیتونی قاضی بشی.
During the Shah's reign, I was a judge. After the revolution, I was told that I could not continue to be a judge because I was a woman.
و من رو کردن که و من رو کردن منشی همون دادگاهی که روزی رئیسش بودم.
And I was demoted. I became the secretary or the clerk of the court that I used to be the judge in.
من این وضع رو تحمل نکردم، اومدم بیرون و رفتم کانون وکلا و پروانه وکالت گرفتم، به عنوان یه وکیل دارم کار میکنم.
I could not tolerate that situation. I went back to practicing law. I got my license to practice in law and I'm practicing law at the present time as an attorney.
تلاش ما این است که هر حکومتی که باشه، نام برای ما مهم نیست، او رو وادار بکنیم که به حقوق بشر احترام بگذاره.
What we're working on is to make the government, regardless of the name of the government, to observe human rights.
I'm just going to follow that with an equally tricky question, and then we'll open up to the audience. When we in the United States raised the question of human rights with our Iranian colleagues, and I raised this question with your president some weeks ago in New York, when we raised the issue, the response is it's a matter of national sovereignty, and that the U.S. in raising the question of human rights is trying to undermine the Islamic Republic. How can we raise the question of human rights and address this question that is raised by the Iranian regime of national sovereignty?
حقوق بشر مفهومی است بین المللی.
Human rights is an international concept.
و بالاتر از قوانین داخلی هر کشور، حتی بالاتر از قانون اساسی هر کشوره.
And it's above the national laws of any country, even the constitution of any country.
و حقوق بین الملل به ما میگوید که دولت‌ها برای نقض حقوق بشر در کشورشون نمیتوانند استناد به قانون اساسی کشور خودشون بکنند.
And the international law tells us that governments cannot refer to their national laws in violation of human rights.
به همون دلیلی که دولت ایران اجازه داره راجع به نقض حقوق بشر در فلسطین یا هر جای دنیا صحبت بکنه، هر دولت دیگری هم حق داره راجع به نقض حقوق بشر در ایران صحبت بکنه.
On the same basis that the government of Iran speaks about violations of human rights in Palestine, any other country has the right to speak about violations of human rights in Iran.
ما دبل استاندارد رو قبول نداریم.
We don't accept double standard.
یعنی ما دولت ایران نمیتونه بگه که حق داره راجع به نقض حقوق بشر مثلا در آمریکا صحبت بکنه، اما آمریکا حق نداره راجع به نقض حقوق بشر در ایران صحبت بکنه.
This means that the government of Iran cannot claim that it can talk on the situation of human rights in the United States, but the United States does not have the right to talk about the situation of human rights in Iran.
و علت این که من توصیه‌ام این است که مذاکرات در سه سطح باید باشه که در سطح جامعه مدنی اون رو من اهمیت میدم، روشن شدن همین گونه مطالبه.
This is why I recommend that negotiations should take place at three levels, specifically at the level of civil society, in order to clarify this issue.
Please, in the front. Wait for the microphone. I think there will be a mic.
مهدی جاوید صدای آمریکا. سوالی که ازتون داشتم اینه که شما نقش زنان رو در جامعه مدنی ایران چطور می‌بینید؟ مهدی جاوید from Voice of America and I'm asking her about how she observes the role of women in Iran's civil society.
زنان در ایران نقش بسیار افتخارآمیزی دارن.
We have to be proud of the role of women in Iran.
در کلیه سطوح اجتماعی فعالیت‌های اجتماعی زنان حضور چشمگیری دارند.
And they are present in every at every level of social activities.
حتی یکی از معاونین آقای احمدی نژاد که نماینده بنیادگراها هست زنه. یعنی اینکه زنان تونستن حتی خودشونو به بنیادگراها هم تحمیل کنن.
Even one of the vice presidents of Iran, one of the vices of Ahmadinejad, is a woman. She is, of course, the representative of the Islamic extremists, but she has been able to impose herself on Ahmadinejad.
و مسئله مهم فقط این است که قوانین ما با وضعیت اجتماعی و فرهنگی زن ایرانی همخوانی نداره.
But the most important issue is that our laws are not compatible with the social situation of women in Iran and cultural, social and cultural situation.
من با یه مثال اینو برای شما روشن میکنم.
If I give you an example, I'll clarify it.
ببینید معاون آقای احمدی نژاد میخواد بره سازمان ملل متحد و از حقوق مردم ایران دفاع بکنه.
Imagine the vice of Ahmadinejad wants to go to the UN and represent the people of Iran.
طبق قانون هر زنی که شوهر داشته باشه اگه بخواد پاسپورت بگیره بایستی اجازه کتبی از شوهرش بگیره.
Pursuant to the law, any woman who is married has to have the permission of her husband to obtain a passport.
حالا این خانم که میخواد بره سازمان ملل متحد از حقوق 70 میلیون مردم ایران دفاع بکنه شب باستی از شوهرش التماس بکنه بگه اجازه خروج از کشور به من بده.
Now, if this woman who wants to represent 70 million people, the population of Iran at the United Nations, has to beg for a permit the night before she leaves.
و معلوم نیست که اگه شب بین زن و شوهر دعوا بشه و اجازه خروج از کشور نده تکلیف صندلی ایران چی میشه.
And if there's a fight between the husband and wife and the husband doesn't permit the wife to go, what's going to happen to the chair of Iran at the UN?
این یک مثال کوچیکه که نشون میده قوانین ما با وضعیت بالای اجتماعی و فرهنگی زن ایرانی همخوانی نداره و باید مورد بازنگری قرار بگیره.
This is a small example, but it shows you how there is no compatibility with the high level of the situation of women in Iran and the laws in Iran. There has to be reform. They have to be amended.
Hi, I'm Ali Wine. I'm a junior fellow here at Carnegie. And I was just wondering, there's been a growing discussion about how the dissident movement in Iran and more broadly the human rights movement, how it's using internet-based technology, so platforms like Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, how it's using those to become a growing force in Iran. And I was wondering if you could, one, if you could comment on that, and also if you could comment on how you, if at all, have been able to use those technologies to empower yourself and your movement.
خوشبختانه تکنولوژی به کمک آزادی بیان می آید.
Fortunately, technology has helped freedom of speech.
و در ایران استفاده از اینترنت خیلی رواج داره.
And in Iran, using the internet is very common.
البته دولت خیلی از سایت‌ها رو فیلتر کرده.
Of course, the government filters many of the sites.
از جمله شما برید ببینید تمام سایت‌های مربوط به حقوق زن فیلتر شده.
For example, all of the sites on women's rights have been filtered.
اما و همچنین سایت کانون مدافعان حقوق بشر رو در همون روزی که راه اندازی شد فورا فیلتر کرده.
And also the website for the Center for the Defense of Human Rights was filtered, the website, right on the same day that it was put up.
اما مسئله قابل توجه این است که جوانای ما خیلی خوب بلدن فیلتر بشکنن.
But the youth in Iran know very well how to handle the filters and break them.
و راههای پیدا میکنن همه جا میرن.
And they find ways to go to different sites.
دو مرتبه حکومت یه جور دیگه اینا رو فیلتر میکنه.
Then the government comes back and refilters them.
و ظرف دو سه روز باز جوانا فیلترها رو میشکنن و میرن تو.
But within two or three days the young people break the filters and go back.
و این تبدیل به یک مسابقه و بازی شده بین جوانای ما و حکومت که اینا فیلتر میکنن و میشکنن اینا رو.
It has actually become a race and a game between the young people and the government who break and refilter.
Barbara Slavin from the Washington Times. It's very nice to see you here back again. I wanted to ask you, why do you think the government has become more fixated on security? Why has the crackdown increased over the last couple of years? What are the reasons for that? And do you anticipate any improvement with the Obama administration, or is this trend going to continue? And then just a question about you personally. You have been harassed very severely. Are you going to be able to go back in the next few months, or are you going to stay in the West for a while? Thank you.
دو تا سوال میکنی. یکیش اینه که از نظر شخصی خود شما رو که اگر مزاحمتونش در یه مدتی در غرب میمونی یا برمیگردین. دومی دیگه مسئله جز ملی هستش که میگم هر کس رو که میگیرم به بهانه این هستش که به امنیت ملی و چرا دارم فشار بیشتری رو مسئله امنیت ملی میگذارم.
این که چرا حکومت اینقدر همه رو متهم میکنه به اقدام علیه امنیت ملی، باید بگم که یه شیوه جدیدی نیست و خاص ایران هم نیست.
The fact that the government accuses everyone of taking measures against the national security is not a new thing, and it's not only Iranian.
اصولاً حکومت ها وقتی که میخواهند بر وقتی که میخواهند از آزادی های فردی رو بکاهند استناد میکنند به امنیت ملی.
In general, when governments want to limit individual rights, they usually refer to national security.
و همونطوری که گفتم این یک قاعده کلی در سراسر دنیاست.
And I think this is a general rule all over the world.
من ایرانی هستم، در ایران به دنیا آمدم، تو ایران زندگی میکنم و در ایرانم خواهم مرد.
I'm an Iranian. I have been born in Iran. I was raised in Iran. I work in Iran and I will die in Iran.
من بعد از اینکه سخنرانیم در آمریکا تموم بشه فوراً به ایران برمیگردم. من امروز
After I finish my speaking tour in America, I'll go back to Iran right away.
و من یه سری از کارهام جنبه بین‌المللی داره که میام سفرارمو انجام میدم، ولی کم فوراً به ایران برمیگردم چون بیس من در ایرانه.
I travel abroad because I do some international work, but my base is in Iran and I always go back to Iran.
و من روز جمعه به ایران برمیگردم.
And on Friday I'm going back to Iran.
My name is Judd Harriet. I'm a documentary film producer. The response of the government of Iran to a renewed dialogue with the Obama administration has not been favorable. My question is, can we proceed with a dialogue at the civil society level in the face of hostility from the Iranian government?
با تمام اینکه دولت ایران حاضر نشده با دولت امریکا مذاکره داشته باشه، جوامع مدنی میتونن ادامه بدن یا میتونن این گفتگو رو داشته باشن؟
همونطوری که گفتم 2 میلیون ایرانی در آمریکا زندگی میکنن و تعداد زیادی به این مناسبت از ایرانی ها مایل به بهبود روابط دو کشور هستن.
As I said earlier, over 2 million Iranians live in America, and I think that the majority of them want a better relationship between the two countries.
شما میدونید چه تعداد عظیمی از خانواده ها میخواستن بیان بچه هاشون اینجا ببینند و بهشون ویزا ندادن.
You know that many people are awaiting visas to come to this country and visit with their family.
میدونید که چه تعداد از دانشجویان ما از دانشگاه های آمریکایی پذیرش گرفتن ولی که بهشون ویزا ندادن.
You know that numerous of the Iranian students received acceptance from American universities but were not able to get a visa to come in.
شما میدونید که چه تعداد از دانشجویان ایرانی دارن اینجا درس میخونن ولی که نمیتونن برای تعطیلات تابستان برن ایران خانوادهشون رو ببینن برای اینکه میترسن که بخوان دو مرتبه برگردن بهشون ویزا ندن و اینا در حقیقت توی آمریکا مجبورن تا پایان تحصیلشون بمانن.
Do you know that many Iranian students who are in American universities studying here cannot go back for summer vacations to visit with their family because they fear that they will not be able to get a visa and come back?
بنابراین به این دلایلی که گفتم طبیعی است که مردم ایران علاقمند به عادی سازی و بهبود روابط دو کشور هستند.
On the basis of what I told you, it's natural that the people of Iran want a normalization and better relations between the two countries.
و امیدوارم که با مذاکرات اختلاف دو کشور حل بشه.
And I hope that through negotiations and dialogue we can resolve the problems between the two countries.
اما در زمینه مذاکره بین جامعه مدنی دو کشور بایستی بگم که این مذاکره در حقیقت از طریق اساتید ایرانی که در اینجا هستن، از طریق دانشجویان ما، از طریق خبرنگارانی که شما به ایران میفرستید مدت هاست شروع شده.
But regarding negotiations between civil society, I think that it has been started from a long time ago. Through the members of the media who come to Iran, through the students who live here, through the professors who are exchanged.
و امیدوارم که مسائل سیاسی به روابط حسنه ملت ایران و ملت آمریکا صدمه نزنه.
And I hope that political issues do not in any way hurt the relationship between the civil societies and the people of Iran and the people of the United States.
My name is Stephanie Brancaforte. I'm teaching at George Washington University and also doing a lot of work on internally displaced people around the world. When you won the Nobel Prize, of course, human rights activists and feminists around the world were very pleased and I think even felt a tiny bit of ownership and recognition themselves. And I was wondering, what can human rights activists and feminists do to support your movement in Iran? Or is it ultimately counterproductive given the political situation?
و فعالان حقوق بشر یا فمینیست‌ها در اینجا چه کار میتونن بکنن که کمک بکنن به کار شما در ایران و یا اینکه اثر عکس خواهد داشت اگه کاری بکنن؟
حمایتی که مردم دنیا از فمینیست‌های ایران میکنند مسلماً برای ما با ارزشه.
The support of the people of the world from the feminists in Iran is very important for us.
و خواهش می‌کنیم که این حمایت رو ادامه بدید.
And we want to ask you to please continue the support.
یکی از مثلا اگر کسی رو به جرم فعالیت‌های فمینیستی دستگیر کردن اعتراض بکنید.
For example, if a person is caught for feminist activities, please object.
و اخبار مربوط به فمینیست‌های ایران و مدافعین حقوق بشر رو در ایران ترجمه کنید و در هر جایی که هستید منتشر کنید.
Broadcast and translate the news, or translate and broadcast the news regarding the feminist activities in Iran or the people who have been apprehended in this regard.
اگر دنیا راجع به فمینیست های ایرانی صحبت نکنه وضعیت بدتر میشه.
If the world does not speak about the feminists in Iran, the situation will get worse.
متشکرم. من سمی هستم، با وزارت خارجه کار میکنم. شما گفتین که روابط بین ایران و امریکا نباید یه گروه مخصوصی یا یه شرکت بزرگی رو کمک کنه. برعکس این روابط بین ایران و امریکا، یا چه گروه مخالف روابط بین ایران و امریکا هستن و چرا؟ You'd said that relations and dialogue between Iran and the United States shouldn't be in the interest or shouldn't help a specific group or company. And the opposite of that is, I'm wondering what groups would be opposed to relations between Iran and the United States and for what reason? And I'm Bill Samuel from the State Department.
این شرکت ها چه صدمه میتونن به روابط بزنن که میگیم اینطور نباشه؟
شما که در وزارت امور خارجه هستید حتما معنای این حرف من رو خیلی بهتر میفهمید.
You work for the State Department. You should understand what I said very well.
روابط، ببینید، زمان شاه یه بارم آمریکا با ایران صحبت کرد.
During the Shah's reign in 1953, America spoke with Iran.
اما نفعش فقط به کمپانی‌های نفتی آمریکا رسید و دکتر محمد مصدق رو سرنگون کرد.
But what happened was that the oil companies in America benefited and Dr. Mossadegh was toppled.
یا فکر می‌کنید که حمله به عراق چه نفعی واسه شرکت چند شرکت بزرگ داشت؟
Or the attack on Iraq, what was the benefit of it for the big companies, some big companies?
مردم عراق کشته شدند.
The people of Iraq were killed.
هزینه زیادی بر مالیات دهندگان آمریکایی تحمیل شد.
And the taxpayers in America are paying heavily for it.
اما سهام چند شرکت سرسام‌آور رفت قیمتش بالا.
But some of the companies, the shares of some of the companies rose.
وقتی که میگم مذاکرات دو دولت باید به نفع مردم دو کشور باشه نه به نفع چند کمپانی محدود، طبیعتاً حرفای منو میفهمید.
Therefore, when I say that the negotiations between the two countries should benefit the people of both countries, not only some companies, you understand what I'm saying.
خانم بادی، I speak in English, so I cannot translate. Welcome to America. My name is Faribos Frank Fuladi, procurementusa.info. I'm a human rights and peace activist. The fourth situation is access to food, access to shelter, access to healthcare, and access to education. These four things, it's a major issue that each government should make sure, as we do in Maryland, in Montgomery County, Maryland. I'd like to introduce to you the Montgomery County, Maryland. If we do this, make sure these four issues are taken care of for our citizens, that's, in my opinion, is basic human rights. Are we working on that with children, with women, and disabled in Iran?
Are you going to translate it yourself? Yes, it's your young man. I think
کارهایی که ما باید بکنیم در مورد آموزش، در مورد بهداشت است. میخوام ببینم چهار موضوعی که ما راجبش کار میکنیم در مورد فود، غذا خوردن هست و در مورد آموزش و بهداشت و غذا و میخوام ببینم آیا بچه های ایران و زنان ایران رو در این مورد داریم راجبشون صحبت میکنیم و افرادی که از کار افتاده هستن و آیا این در این جزء حقوق اساسی افراد هست. میخوام ببینم که در حکومت ایران توجهی میشه به این.
من فقط به طور کلی صحبت کنم چون تک تک اینها رو صحبت کردن خیلی وقت میبره.
I'm just going to give you a general answer because if I want to get into each of them we have to spend a lot of time here.
تمام اون چیزی که شما گفتید احتیاج به بودجه مالی داره.
All of what you said needs a big budget, financial budget.
طبق آماری که خود دولت ایران اعلام کرده خط فقر برای یک خانواده چهار نفری در تهران 500,000 تومانه.
Pursuant to the statistics of the government of the Islamic Republic, the poverty line for a four member family is under 500,000 tumans.
و با این ترتیب به حدود 70% کارگرا زیر خط فقر.
Therefore 70% of the workers will fall under the poverty line.
و طبیعی است که وقتی کسی زیر خط فقر باشه امکان دسترسی به بهداشت و آموزش و غذا براش کمتر میشه.
And it's natural that when 70% fall under the poverty line, the accessibility to health, to education and to food will be very limited.
من اجازه میخوام کمی بیشتر راجع به علت فقر در جهان صحبت کنم.
But I want to talk to you a little bit about the source of poverty in the world.
من یک پیشنهادی به سازمان ملل متحد دادم برای تهیه کنوانسیونی در زمین بین المللی راجع به فقر، مبارزه با فقر.
And I have proposed to the United Nations a convention regarding the attack on poverty.
علت فقر در جهان چیزهای متعددی میتونه باشه ولی که دو عامل توی تمام کشورها دیده میشه.
There may be several reasons for poverty in the world, but there are two that are prevalent in almost all countries.
اولش بودجه بالای نظامیه.
The first one is a high military budget.
و کشورها بایستی تعهد بکنن که بودجه نظامیشون از مجموعه بودجه آموزش و بهداشتشون بیشتر نباشه.
The governments have to accept that their military budget does not exceed the budget for health and education, both.
و کشورهایی که بدهی خارجی دارن و نمیتونن بدهیشون رو بپردازن در صورتی که ارتششون رو منحل بکنن و فقط از نیروی پلیسشون استفاده بکنن بدهی خارجیشون باید بخشیده بشه.
And the governments that do have foreign debts and cannot pay their debts, if they accept to dissolve their military and only use their police, their debts, their foreign debts should be forgiven.
بنابراین میبینید که بودجه بالای نظامی در همه جا از جمله آمریکا عامل اصلی فقر همه ما هست.
Therefore, as you can see, the military budget in every country and in the United States is one of the reasons of poverty for all of us.
شما میدونید که بودجه نظامی آمریکا چند برابر بودجه آموزش و بهداشتشه؟
You know how many folds is the military budget more than the in the United States than the health and education budget.
ما بایستی با بودجه بالای نظامی در هر کشوری مخالفت کنیم.
Therefore we should not accept higher military budgets in all countries.
Yes.
My name is Viola Ginger from Bloomberg News. I was interested in your point about increasing the dialogue at the civil society level. There have been some groups on both sides who have been in contact, have had some dialogue. What do you think, and that doesn't seem to have produced much, what do you think needs to change in that respect, and how practically can that be translated into a change in government policy on each side?
من وقتی تاکید میکنم راجع به دیالوگ بین دو جامعه مدنی به این نگاه میکنم که وقتی مردم راجع به یک مسئله آگاه بشوند، آگاهی اینها تأثیر خواهد گذاشت راجع به رأیی که موقع انتخابات میدن.
I believe that when I speak about dialogue and negotiations between the civil societies of each country, that brings awareness to the people. And when people are aware of the issues, then that will impact the way they vote.
وقتی که ما قرار بشه نفرت رو بین مردم پرورش بدیم و از همدیگه متنفر باشیم، این نفرت موقع رأی دادن مشخص میشه.
If we bring hatred to the world and talk about hatred all the time, that will impact our votes.
و وقتی که همزیستی و همدلی رو گسترش میدیم و نشان میدهیم که دو جامعه چه وجوه اشتراکی دارن، این آگاهی وقتی که شما رأی میدید اون موقع خودشو نشون میده.
However, if we bring friendship, and if we can bring and talk about commonalities between the two societies, then that will impact the vote as well.
Let's go on the way back. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. Sana Mandolini, MIT Center for International Studies Research Affiliate. I'm going to ask in English, if you don't mind. You said that many Iranians want normalization, and there are certainly many in the U.S. who support negotiations based on mutual respect and mutual interest, as President Obama said, for normalization. But there are also many here who believe in pressurized diplomacy and think that the nuclear issue is the key issue, and that if it doesn't get resolved, sanctions and more isolation is the way to go. And I just wanted to get your response that if we don't get a breakthrough, if we don't get normalization, and the external world, Western world, however you want to frame it, increases its sanctions and isolations on Iran, how do you think, in your opinion, how do you think the Iranian people, the next generation of young people growing up without jobs and opportunities and isolated, how will they react to their own government, to the U.S. and the outside world? Who will they blame? And how will we see a change if we take 8 years in advance, if we go look forward in 8 years?
ولی میدونیم که از نظر سیاسی شما معتقد بودیم که باید گفتگو باشه، ولی میدونیم که مسئله نوکلیر و هسته‌ای ممکنه اینجا مانع بشه، و اینکه در اینجا هم گروه های فشار هستن که مانع از این میشن. اگر قرار بشه که وضعیت بچه ها جوان ها در ایران بدتر بشه و تحریم ها ادامه پیدا بکنه، مخ این جوان ها و افرادی که بیکار خواهند بود در آینده چگونه علیه دولت خودشون و علیه دنیا عکس العمل نشون خواهند داد؟
من بارها اعلام کردم که نه تنها با حمله نظامی به ایران مخالفم، بلکه حتی با تهدید به حمله نظامی هم مخالفم.
I have said numerous times that I know not only do not accept an attack on Iran, a military attack on Iran, I don't even accept the threat of a military attack on Iran.
و همچنین با هر گونه تحریم اقتصادی ایران مخالفم.
And also with all economic sanctions on Iran.
برای اینکه تحریم اقتصادی وضعیت مردم رو فقط خرابتر میکنه و به حکومت صدمه ای نمیزنه.
Because any economic sanction will deteriorate the situation of people but does not hurt the government.
و تهدید به حمله نظامی باعث میشه که دولت به بهانه حفظ امنیت ملی بر قدرت خودش بیفزایه و آزادی‌های فردی رو سرکوب بکنه.
And the threat of a military attack will result in the government becoming stronger and use national security as a result of oppressing people.
آنچه که در ایران جریان داره خواست مردم برای احترام بیشتر به دموکراسی و حقوق بشره.
What goes on in Iran is the people's respect for democracy and human rights in Iran.
و این خواست فقط در یک فضای آرام قابل پیشرفته.
And this demand can only take place in a peaceful situation.
و من خوشحالم که بگویم در ایران تمام گروه‌هایی که برای آزادی فعالیت می‌کنند تمام فعالیتشون صلح طلبانه است و هیچ گروه زیرزمینی یا معتقد به اسلحه وجود نداره.
And I'm glad to tell you that all of the groups that work in Iran on human rights and democracy issues are peaceful groups and none of them are underground groups and none of them are armed.
و خواست من این است که اوضاع ایران رو به سوی حلش ندید به سوی بحران، برای اینکه این باعث میشه که رفتار حکومت با مردم بدتر بشه، آزادی ها رو محدودتر بکنه.
And what I'm asking is not to make the situation in Iran worse so that the government will become stronger and start oppressing people more.
I'm Elizabeth Thompson. I'm a historian at the University of Virginia. I had the pleasure of hearing your former president, Mr. Khatami, at our university a couple of years ago. And he spoke a bit about your constitution. And we historians recognize a difference between the 1906 constitution and the 1979 constitution. Both were brought forth by democratic movements of the people of Iran. But the later constitution reflects a change, perhaps because of 1953 and the subversion of the idea that Iranians and Americans and all people share a universal basis of democracy, law, and human rights by the cynical abuse of the idea of universal law by those with power in the world. You spoke today about both the basis, a pragmatic and political basis of a claim to universal law, universal human rights that exists prior to Islamic law, but also a theoretical basis. And I wonder if you might comment on how important it is to return to the arguments of maybe 100 years ago in the age of Jamal ad-Din Afghani and others, that Islam and other and all human civilizations share basic principles prior to their religions? Or how can we define a universal basis for human rights in the post-colonial age? Yes, that's a long question. I guess, to put it very shortly, is it necessary to make the theoretical argument to the Ayatollahs and the Mullahs, or can we proceed on the, I think what you're saying is a pragmatic claim by all the nations of the world that universal human rights exist and must be honored? Thank you.
چی قبول بکنیم؟ که حقوق بشر یک سانه در واقع.
من صحبتم راجع به این نیست که آیت الله ها یا کشیش ها رو معتقد به چیزی بکنیم.
What I'm talking about is not to convince the Ayatollahs or the priests to accept anything.
بلکه صحبت سر این است که جایی که کشیش ها یا آیت الله ها حکومت میکنند چه باید بکنیم.
Well, what we're talking about is where the Ayatollahs and the priests govern. What do we do there?
در یه چنین جوامعی اون وقت بایستی مذاهب طوری تفسیر بشوند که حقوق بشر قابل اجرا باشه.
In such societies, religion has to be interpreted such that human rights can be applied.
شما هیچ مذهبی رو پیدا نمی کنید که قتل و شکنجه رو بگه کار خوبیه.
You don't find any religion that says murder or torture is good.
همه مذاهب میگن که انسان‌ها مخلوق خداوندن و یکسان آفریده شدن.
All the religions say that people have been created by God and they're equal.
فقط صحبت سر این است که کسانی از مذهب سوء استفاده میکنن.
But what we're talking about is people misusing a religion.
تجربه حکومت کلیسا در قرون وسطا اینو نشون داد.
In the medieval ages, the government of the church proved that.
و به همین دلیلی که میگن بایستی مذهب از سیاست جدا بشود.
This is why I believe in separation of church and state.
و اما در جامعه ای که هنوز مذهب از حکومت جدا نشده چه کار بایستی کرد؟
But in a society where religion has not really been separated from government, what do we do?
اون موقع بایستی مذهب رو طوری تفسیر بکنیم که حقوق بشر رو بشه اجرا کرد.
This is when we have to come up with an interpretation of religion so that in such a way that we can apply human rights standards.
Thank you. My name is Humaira Mukhtarzadeh. I'm from the International Foundation for Electoral Systems. I'd like to ask your thoughts about a sensitive topic, and I would understand if you couldn't comment, but I'd like to get your thoughts on the power and the role of the Supreme Leader, Mr. Khamenei. His power is so enshrined in not only the foundation of the Islamic revolution and state, but also in the modern Iranian state. And I'm wondering if you think that, you know, for Iran to make progress from every respect, human rights, politically, economically, if his role needs to be re-examined, and where, from the Iranian constitutional perspective, does that need to start?
در قانون اساسی اختیارات اصلی متعلق است به رهبر.
In the constitution of Iran, the major authorities are that of the supreme leader.
و رهبر بالای سه قوه است.
And the supreme leader is on top of the three powers.
آیا نقض حقوق بشر در ایران منتسب است به قانون اساسی ما و چنین نقشی؟
Is violation of human rights in Iran referred to the constitution and his role?
برای اینکه شما به این جواب برسید اون وقت بایستی ببینید مثلا در کشوری مثل زمان صدام حسین اونا رهبر مذهبی داشتن یا نداشتن.
In order to find the answer to this question, let's look at the situation of Iraq during Saddam Hussein. Did they have a supreme leader or no?
آیا نقض حقوق بشر زمان صدام بستگی به این مسئله داشت؟
Did the violation of human rights during the Saddam's reign have anything to do with this issue?
مثلا در سودان که این اتفاقا میفته اونها رهبر مذهبی هم نداره.
Or what is going on in Sudan? They don't have a supreme leader.
اما وضعیت طوری است که حتی شورای امنیت هم عمر بشیر رو فرستاد به ICC.
But the situation is such that even the Security Council referred the case to the ICC for Omar Bashir.
بارها و بارها گفتم من به عنوان مدافع حقوق بشر به شکل به نام حکومت کار ندارم.
And I have said numerous times as a defender of human rights that I am not talking about the name of the government.
من به شیوه حکومت کار دارم.
I'm talking about the acts of the government.
و حکومت ایران به شیوه‌ای است که نقض حقوق بشر میکنه.
The government of Iran is such that it violates human rights.
زمان شما رهبر نداشتیم.
During the Shah's reign we didn't have a leader.
اما بازم نقض حقوق بشر داشتیم.
But we had human rights violations.
بنابراین اولین جواب شما این است که نوع و شکل حکومت برای من مهم نیست.
Therefore, the first response to your question is that the type of government and the name of the government is not important for me.
مهم این است که چگونه با مردم میخواد رفتار کنه.
What counts is how do they act with people.
و سوال دوم این است که آیا قانون اساسی قابل تغییر است یا نه.
And the second question is whether the constitution can be changed or not.
از جهت تئوری بله.
Theoretically, yes.
در علم حقوق هیچ قانونی ازلی و ابدی نیست.
In law, no law is eternal.
هر قانونی قابل تعویض است.
Any law can be changed.
و حتی در خود قانون اساسی هم یک مواردی پیش بینی شده که چطور میشه قانون عوض کرد.
Even in the constitution, there are a few lines about how to change the law.
اما اینکه آیا این اتفاق خواهد افتاد اون مسئله دیگری است.
But whether that will happen or not, that's a different story.
این بستگی داره به خواست مردم.
It depends on the people and what they want.
و چقدر در مورد خواستشون اصرار داشته باشن.
And the fact that and how much they insist on what they want and their demand.
Let's go on the way back again.
Kevin Slayton, the Carnegie Endowment. I had a question about the role of the UN in advancing human rights in Iran. What is the role of the UN, and how far should the UN go? What do you think are the limits of what the UN can do without harming the people of Iran or being counterproductive?
کجاست که صدمه میزنه به مردم ایران؟
نقش سازمان ملل در اعتلاء حقوق بشر در هر جای جهان از جمله ایران بسیار مهمه.
The role of the United Nations regarding progress of human rights is important in all of the countries of the world, specifically Iran.
فقط مسئله مهم این است که این سازمان ملل به علت ساختاری که داره با قدرت نقشش رو اعمال نمی‌کنه.
The problem is though that the United Nations does not have the power to do what it does because of the way it's been founded.
ساختار سازمان ملل دو ایراد عمده داره.
There are two major defects in the foundation of the United Nations.
اول اینکه دموکراتیک نیست.
First of all, it's not democratic.
چند کشور حق وتو دارن و این درست نیست.
Some countries have the veto right and that's not correct.
دوم اینکه سازمان ملل متحد در سازمان ملل متحد دولت‌ها هستند که تصمیم می‌گیرن.
The second thing is that in the United Nations it's the governments that decide.
و در خیلی از کشورها دولت‌ها نماینده مردمشون نیستن، نماینده ملتشون نیستن.
And in many countries the governments do not represent the people.
بنابراین تصمیماتی که می‌گیرن مردم رو راضی نمی‌کنه و به نفع مردم نیست.
Therefore what they decide does not make people happy and it's not in the interests of the people.
و برای رفع این مشکل ساختاری سازمان ملل متحد من همواره توصیه کردم که از NGO ها استفاده بشه.
And I have always proposed that the representatives of the NGOs participate in the United Nations in order to resolve this issue.
حداقل اینها به اینها اجازه داده بشه بیان حرفاشونو بزنن.
At least they will have a right to speak there.
و یکی از کارهایی که می شود در جهت تقویت سازمان ملل متحد انجام داد این است که امیدوارم آمریکا از این به بعد به کنوانسیون های بین المللی بپیونده.
And one of the ways to strengthen the United Nations is that the United States accedes to international conventions.
و من امیدوارم ضمن اینکه من بسیار تقدیر میکنم آقای اوباما گوانتانامو رو بست، امیدوارم که روزی دولت آمریکا رو به آی سی سی ملحق بکنه و باعث تقویت این نهاد بشه.
I do appreciate very much the fact that President Obama closed down Guantanamo, but I hope that one day the United States will ratify the ICC convention and will join the International Criminal Court.
الان یکی از علل تضعیف سازمان ملل متحد و نهادهای وابسته به اون مثل ICC این است که آمریکا مخالف این است و این درست نیست.
One of the reasons of weakening or the United Nations and or the ICC is the fact that the United States does not agree with them, and this is not correct.
من خواهش میکنم شماها به عنوان شهروندان آمریکایی نامه به اوباما، به پرزیدنت اوباما بنویسید و به ازش بخواهید که به ICC ملحق بشه و بدین گونه ICC رو تقویت بکنید.
And I want to ask you, all of the citizens of the United States, to write to President Obama and ask him to ratify the ICC and strengthen the ICC this way.
My name is Josh Agubzida. I'm a student at UCLA. Merci kot madin inja amruz. منو ببخش فارسیم خیلی خوب نیست توی انگلیسی حرف میزنم. My question is, many say that Ahmadinejad came to power because many people were disillusioned by the reformers and Khatami because they didn't bring about the change they promised. So I want to know, with the elections coming up soon, do you think that the reformers have a chance and that they might be able to bring about change now that Obama is president here?
این که آیا اصلاح طلبا به قدرت میرسند یا نه، این خودش یک سواله.
The fact that whether the reformists would come into power or not is a question.
و سوال دوم این است که اگر به قدرت رسیدند آیا می توانند تغییرات عمده‌ای بدهند؟
But the second question is, if they come to power, whether they can bring change.
من امیدوارم اصلاح طلبا اگر به قدرت رسیدند، تکرار می کنم، از 8 سالی که در قدرت بودند یک بار دیگه نگاه بکنند و عملکردشون رو تصحیح بکنن که بتوانند اصلاحات مورد نظر رو انجام بدن.
And if they gain power, and I insist, if they gain power, they should review the 8 years that they were in power and see what they had done and see what changes they can bring.
من به یه مورد مثلا اشاره میکنم.
I will give you one example.
تقریبا در آخرین سال مدرس ششم که مدرس رفرمیستی بود، آقای خاتمی 2 لایحه به مجلس بردن که یکی از اینها لغو نظارت استصوابی شورای نگهبان بود.
During the last year of the 6th parliament, which was the last year when Khatami was in power, he brought in 2 laws or 2 acts to the parliament. One of them was regarding the supervision of the Guardian Council on elections.
این یک لایحه بسیار مهمی بود و اگر تصویب میشد و نهایی میشد خیلی میتوانست در آینده سیاسی ایران نقش سازنده ای را ایفا کنه.
This was a very important bill, and if it had been passed, it would have played a big role in the political future of Iran.
مجلس ششم که رفرمیست بود این رو تصویب کرد، ولی که شورای نگهبان این رو قبول نکرد و برش گردوند به مجلس برای اصلاحاتی.
The parliament, the 6th parliament passed this law, But the Guardian Council returned it to the parliament for some amendments.
دیگه چیزی از عمر مجلس باقی نمونده بود و مجلس نتونست کاری بکنه و در نتیجه این لایحه همینطوری باقی موند و تصویب نشد.
But unfortunately there was not much time left for the sixth parliament. They didn't get to it and so the law has been sitting there forever. It hasn't been passed.
و من همیشه فکر میکنم که ای کاش این لایحه رو در ابتدای تأسیس مجلس ششم که فرصت زیادی بود 4 سال وقت بود این رو اون موقع به مجلس میدادن که میدونین فرصت بود که مجلس با شورای نگهبان وارد یک گفتمان یک چالشی بشه شاید پیروز میشدن.
And I always think it would have been much better if they had introduced the bill at the beginning of the sixth parliament. Then they would have had 4 years to negotiate and challenge the bill between the two authorities and maybe come to a conclusion.
به هر حال اصلاح طلبها اگر به قدرت برسن بایستی به گذشته نگاه بکنن و بعضی از حرکت ها رو تصحیح بکنن که بتونن بیشتر تأثیر گذار باشن.
At any rate, if they gain power, the reformists should review what they have done in the past and rectify their mistakes so that they can have a better influence.
Okay. We have only about 10 minutes, so why don't we bunch together 3 questions. I'll take one from the front and the middle and in the back. Why don't we start in the front, please, first.
Tony Verstandig, Aspen Institute. I wanted to get back to the issue of dialogue and civil society, which I think is very crucial. There's an inherent tension between participating and reaching out to promote dialogue and civil society, and Aspen Institute, in fact, had a very open and transparent program in which we had an active series of seminars with Iranians, two of whom were recently arrested and convicted, Iranian activists, and tried and convicted for fomenting a velvet revolution. It weighs very heavy on us. And I'd like to ask you, how can those of us who want to promote and enhance dialogue deal with the reality, as Barbara in her previous question, the crackdown that's occurring and risks for those who want to participate in these very open and transparent dialogues?
Can we get 2 more? One from the back, one from the front. Smith, Meryl Smith with the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants. Iran has been a generous host for about 1 million Afghan refugees for many, many years now, and I noticed your book on the subject last year, which I enjoyed very much. My question is, is there a force, a constituency in an Iranian civil society for the rights of refugees, particularly the Afghan refugees, but others as well, to more normal life since it's not possible for them to go back to Afghanistan? And secondly, is there any potential for civil society engagement between American civil society groups, such as our own, and Iranian groups to pursue the rights of refugees and better policies in Iran and elsewhere? Thank you very much.
سلام، اسم من امیر هوشنگی است. خیلی هم خوشحال شدم که امروز اومدی اینجا. My name is Amir Hoshangi and I'm a student, and you were speaking earlier about the role of Baha'is in Iran. And as someone that's represented Baha'i people who have been persecuted in Iran, what is the Iranian reaction in the civil society from all this persecution? What can be done besides going to the government and representing these people who have been persecuted for so long?
در مورد دیالوگ بین جامعه مدنی ایران و آمریکا باید بگویم که طبیعتاً مشکلاتی از هر دو طرف وجود داره.
Regarding the dialogue between the civil societies of Iran and the United States, I must reiterate that there are naturally problems.
یه مقدار دولت ایران به کسانی که این دیالوگ رو میکنن با سوء ظن نگاه میکنه. و حرف شما درسته.
You're right. The government of Iran is suspicious of the people who engage in these kinds of negotiations.
و از طرف دیگر دولت شما هم یعنی دولت آمریکا هم بازم با سوءظن نگاه میکنه ویزا نمیده.
And on the other hand, the government of the United States is suspicious as well. They don't issue visas.
و این ندادن ویزا و دستگیری کسانی که با آمریکایی همکاری میکنن در حقیقت دروی یه سکه است.
Non-issuance of the visas and apprehension of the people who in Iran who want to talk to the civil society are both sides of a coin.
این مشکلات وجود داره، قبول دارم، ولی که بایستی راه رو هموار کرد.
These problems exist, but I think that we have to smooth the path.
بایستی به دولت هامون بگیم که به جامعه مدنی با سوء ظن نگاه نکنن.
We have to tell our governments not to look at civil society with suspicion.
و در ارتباط با جامعه مدنی من بیشتر توصیه‌ام این است که هم حرفه‌ای ها با هم کار کنن، مثلا ژورنالیست ها بیان با ژورنالیست های آمریکایی کار کنن، معلم ها با معلم ها، که یک نوع سنخیتی هم بین اونها باشه.
And when I speak about negotiations between civil society, I prefer people from different professions to talk to their colleagues. For example, the teachers talk to teachers in the United States. The members of the media talk to the members of the media.
قبول دارم سخته، ولی کن ما بایستی سعی کنیم راه رو هموار کنیم.
I know it's difficult, but I think that we have to pave the path.
در مورد پناهندگان افغانی، خوشبختانه جامعه مدنی ایران نسبت به این مسئله حساسه و سعی میکنه که اونها رو کمک کنه.
Regarding the Afghani refugees in Iran, fortunately, the civil society is sensitive to the issue and tries to help them.
مثلا یکی از مشکلات افغان‌ها این است که چون بدون اینها جواز اقامت ندارند، در نتیجه بچه‌هاشون که به دنیا میاد دولت بر اینها شناسنامه صادر نکرده و نمیتونن در مدارس معمولی ثبت نام بکنن.
For example, one of the problems that the Afghanis have in Iran is that since they don't have a residence permit, the government does not issue birth certificates for the children who are born to these refugees, and therefore they can't pursue education.
از طرف جامعه مدنی ایرانی چندین مدرسه واسه این بچه‌ها ساخته شده که به اینها سواد آموزی یاد میدن. البته متاسفانه مدرک تحصیلی نمیتونیم بهشون بدیم، ولی کن بهشون سواد آموزی یاد میدیم.
The civil society in Iran has built a few schools for the children of the refugees, and we do teach them so that they we teach them literacy so that they can read and write. However, unfortunately, we cannot issue any degrees.
جامعه مدنی به فکر پناهندگان افغانی هست، ولی کن کمکایی که میکنه به اینها کمه و اینها نیازشون خیلی بیشتر از ایناست. دولت بایستی قسمت اعظم نیازها رو برطرف بکنه.
The civil society is concerned about the problems of the Afghani refugees and can address a few of their problems, but as you know, they have numerous problems and it's the government that has to take responsibility and address the more important issues.
و در مورد مذاکرات، بله، حقوق پناهندگان هم حتما بایستی جزء زمینه مذاکرات باشه.
And of course, when we speak of negotiations, the rights of the refugees should be addressed as well.
و در مورد بهایا همونطوری که صحبت کردم، متاسفانه اینها مورد تبعیض قانونی هستن.
And regarding the Baha'is, as I said earlier, unfortunately, they are discriminated against by laws.
در ایران ما تلاش زیادی کردیم که وضعیت اینها رو کمی بهتر بکنیم، از جمله وکلای کانون مدافعان حقوق بشر از چندین بار رفتن دیوان عدالت اداری شکایت کردند که برای اینها حق تحصیل در دانشگاه رو بگیرن.
And regarding the issues of the Baha'is, the civil society is very sensitive, and we have worked a lot on that, and the defenders of human rights at the Center for the Defense of Human Rights have gone to administrative courts and have tried to obtain the right to higher education for the Baha'is.
و هفت نفر از رهبران بهائی ایران رو حدود 9 ماه قبل دستگیر کردن که من خودم از اینها دفاع میکنم.
Seven of the leaders of the Baha'i faith in Iran were apprehended approximately 9 months ago and they are among my clients. I defend them.
به هر حال اون چه که در توان ما هست برای رفع تبعیض از هر کس از جمله بهائی انجام میدیم.
Therefore, we do what we can in order to fight discrimination against all, including the Baha'is.
And unfortunately, we have to conclude the session now. I'm going to give Dan Bromberg the last word, but I just wanted to thank you all again for coming, to thank Mrs. Ershadi for a wonderful job interpreting, and thank again Mrs. Ebadi, who, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of all the Iranians here, is truly a national treasure. Thank you. Okay.